It's easy to appreciate a perfectly prepared dish at a 4-star restaurant. What's harder is understanding the chemistry of cooking. But then Harold McGee wrote a book about just that subject. It's called On Food and Cooking, The Science and Lore of the Kitchen. It became an overnight classic and has been called the most widely quoted culinary work in English. McGee was in Madison recently and stopped by the kitchens of the celebrated L'Etoile restaurant to give Anne Strangechamps a guided tour of food science. McGee gave running commentary, while Chef Tori Miller fried up some bacon and onions.
So what's actually happening when Tori cooks bacon?
What's happening at the surface of the bacon is that the sugars and proteins that are part of what make up bacon are reacting with each other. They're kind of breaking apart and then recombining with themselves and with each other. Now, chemists still don't understand exactly what's going on. They understand the first couple of steps, but after that it gets so complicated that they haven't really cataloged all the different molecules that are formed in the process.
That's amazing. Something that is a mystery to science, and yet most of us, we encounter this in our kitchens, you know, a couple times a week.
Exactly. Like, I can cook bacon and onions, like, every day and be happy for the rest of my life. There's just something about the smell, and when you add the onions to the bacon, it just takes me back to a place that just makes me want to actually crack a couple eggs and throw it right in there and right. and get a couple forks, and we'll be good to go.
Harold, do you think there's some... Are we evolutionarily kind of coded to love that smell, the smell of browning meat?
You know, that's a really interesting question and something that I've wondered a lot about, because browned aromas and flavors did not exist during our biological evolution. They've only existed in our experience for the last, what, maybe 10, 15,000 years, and we haven't evolved that much in that short a period of time. So for me, that was a fascinating question. Why are these smells so attractive, given the fact that our ancestors never would have encountered them?
So what do you think? I mean, why are those? Because there is nothing like that smell.
Yeah. My explanation, which pleases me but still leaves me a little unsatisfied, is that the important thing about the flavors that are generated in cooking is their complexity, their richness. Mm. Because if you think about our ancestors on the savanna or wandering through the grasslands looking for something to eat, their senses were probably much more alive than ours are, because we can kind of take our food sources for granted. They had to be paying attention to what they could smell in the wind and the air and on the ground and so on. And I think when, for example, they came across a ripe fruit of some kind, that must have been such an explosion of sensation that it just must have stuck with them. And it seems to me that what characterizes ripe fruit, which is a food that's actually meant for animals to eat, it's meant to attract animals to disperse the seeds, fruit has a very complex flavor. It has aroma, it has sweetness, it has saltiness, it has savoriness. It's a very mouth-filling experience. And I think when we cook, what we're doing is, in a way, making something kind of like what fruit was for our ancestors,
oh,
something that fills the mouth and just satisfies those senses that we have.
Have you ever, Harold, from your knowledge of chemistry, thought of new flavored combinations that you might not have thought of from a sensory perspective?
No, my mind doesn't work that way. I have friends, chefs, whose minds do work that way, and so they'll actually look at lists of flavors in different foods, because chemists have done some analysis of that kind, and then they'll see the same thing in two different columns and say, I think maybe chocolate and caviar would go together, and then they mix them together. That's one example of an idea that Heston Blumenthal in England came up with after looking at these lists of flavor compounds. But that's the way his mind works.
Did that work? Chocolate and caviar?
Most people who have it enjoy it, but not everyone. And I would say that that's true of pretty much all foods, that there are some people who just can't stand cheese, for example.
But so now what's the science behind that? He looked at the flavor compounds and realized that caviar and chocolate share some of the same molecules?
Yeah, yeah. And so he thought, well, maybe those will serve as a kind of bridge to bring these two things that we don't normally think of as going together.
What other things go together like that?
Well, have a very good example right here with the bacon and the onions, because one of the things that characterizes meat as an ingredient is the fact that it's largely protein. And protein has two atoms that most other ingredients don't have, starches and fruits and vegetables. It has sulfur and it has nitrogen. And those two elements give the flavor of protein a very specific kind of quality. And the wonderful thing about onions is they're a very rich source of sulfur. Very different compounds, but then if you put them in the same pan with meat and cook them together, the sulfur in the onions reinforces the sulfur in the meat and makes the meat taste meatier. And the meat makes the onions taste meatier. And so you get this wonderful synergism.
Isn't that lovely? It's like if you want to use a musical analogy, like a chord that creates a harmony.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, that's the way I try to think of flavor is exactly that way, that we often think just in practical terms that the flavor of meat is the flavor of meat. But in fact, the flavor of meat is a combination of hundreds of different sub-flavors, if you will, and all put together, they make the flavor of meat. And so it really is more like listening to a chord than like listening to a specific note. And once you begin to think that way, then you can see, well, that onions have particular overtones, meats have particular overtones, put them together and you stretch out the chord.
And is that what you do too, Tori? Are you paying attention to the undertones or the overtones in certain ingredients to think about what might marry well with something else?
With this particular ingredient, like with bacon, I just think that bacon is delicious. And then I would think, well, what would make bacon more delicious? Maybe some onions and some aged cheese and some tomato soup, you know, maybe a little wine, you know, and that's where, like, I come from, I think, as far as thinking about ingredients, you know, and in dishes, adding a little bit of heat, a little bit of salt, a little bit of acid, you know, that sort of thing is the chefy stuff that we get to do. But in combinations, I think, is really where, you know, dishes come together for me. And I always try to think of dishes as their parts and then as their wholes. And then in the end result, like you say, is that harmony that comes out of that chord, I think, is just, it's a great analogy.
And Strange Champs in the kitchen with Harold McGee, author of On Food and Cooking, and Chef Tori Miller of L'Etoile Restaurant in Madison, Wisconsin.